It didn't work out. It didn't work out. But I was so happy. I did the thing that was that everybody told me was impossible. You'll never be able to go there. They'll never listen to you. But I went there. They did listen to me. It didn't work out, but I did what I had to do. And I think it's probably the same thing for everything. I mean, you have to try. You have to give your best. You have to give your best. You do everything. This way, there's no regrets. You can't say, oh, maybe it would have worked if I did this or that. No, when you do everything you can, it's okay, even if you don't succeed. And that's it.
This is Living As You. Here's your host, PQ.
It's time for some Parisian love. Who's ready for a French superstar? Today on Living As You, we're blessed with the presence of Louis Grenier, a French concierge, a restaurant entrepreneur, and a sensational singer. A concierge of 30 plus years in some of the most renowned hotels in all of France, and an inductee of the prestigious Gold Keys Concierge Association, Louis is taking the world by a storm by rewriting what's possible and the limits each of us place upon ourselves. I got to know Louis quite well during my time in Angers, France, during the spring of 2019. Hospitality is his middle name. You will not meet a more welcoming individual. Enjoy the show.
Hey, Patrick!
Oh my gosh, tu vas bien?
Je vais bien, et toi, comment vas-tu?
Ça va bien. C'est formidable de voir ton visage. Oh my gosh!
Thank you. I was worried because you know I'm not familiar with all this stuff, and so I'm glad it's working. Je suis très content.
C'est formidable, Louis. This is amazing. How are you guys?
Listen, you know, we're doing fine. We're going through some kind of crazy things, like everyone. But la vie est belle. And we must say thank you every day. We're all healthy, I thank God. And I mean, you know, we have no, even if it's crazy, we shouldn't complain. I mean, so many people are going through some, it's more than a disaster for many, many people. So we have to realize that if we can help a little bit, well, that's good. But everybody is just hanging on and hoping. And c'est comme ça. C'est comme ça.
Nous sommes très reconnaissants, grateful for every day, tous les jours. Avec le meilleur personne dans le monde, le Tom Jones, number two. Louis, this is an extraordinary, say extraordinaire plaisir to have you here. Since I really got to know you when I went to Angers last spring, I think it was so apparent. I think this captivates. This is a quick story I want to start things off with that really captivates my introduction to you and your friendship with my dad. So before I went to France in Angers, my dad told me about this man named Louis Grenier, and his family in Paris. And he had met you, obviously, going over to Roland Garros with the Nike tennis team.
Right.
And he hadn't seen you for over 20, 25 years, but you guys still exchanged Christmas cards every year. And every year you'd exchange those cards, you'd see all of our, my brother, me, your kids continue to grow and grow and grow.
Admit that your dad was better than me on that, because he never missed one. I probably missed a few, but he never missed one.
And then I get to the airport. I get to Charles de Gaulle Airport in Paris. I have no idea what the heck is going to happen the next 4 months. And I walk out and I'm jet lagged and I don't know. Okay, Paris, whoa, this is crazy. And I get down to go get my bags. And who do I see but this man I've never met open up his arms wide and yell, Patrick, bienvenue, welcome to Paris. in that moment, I just remember thinking, oh my gosh, this must be the world famous Lewis. So Lewis, you've meant so much to our family, obviously to me personally, these last 2 years that I've gotten to know you, and your story is something I just would love to dig into a little bit today. So I want to start with a particular question for you. Sure. You have an incredible story of courage, of trust, and we've talked about taking the leap, taking adventure, even when it seems scary, uncertain. Please tell me about a moment or two in your life story when you stepped out of your comfort zone and really exhibited great courage, as that's something you do tremendously well.
Well, I think the first thing that comes on my mind is probably the day, well, you know, I didn't have the chance to go to school a long time. So I started working very young. I'm not afraid to say that today. I wasn't very proud to say that probably 30 years ago, but it's true that I stopped going to school. I was probably something like 14 years old, something like that, you know. And because we were in France, it wasn't easy for all the family. And I don't know if I told you that, but I started my professional career, first of all, as a stonemason with my dad. And I did work with him for about 5-6 years, up to 21. But we were a wonderful team, like probably you are with your dad today. I did it because it was important for the family, for the living and everything. And everything worked out okay, except that when I came to 21 years old, I wasn't sure I wanted to do this really all my life. And so I did step out of my comfort zone and just ask my dad if it was okay with him that I just take a few months just to test to something else and to see if I'm supposed to stay all my life as a stonemason, or should I maybe just try something else just to know what I'm missing or what I'm not missing. And that's how, after that, you know the story. I did walk in the little door of the hotel business. I was out of my comfort zone because all this was new for me. I didn't even know what a concierge of a hotel was. I started by carrying luggage, bellboy, all that stuff, cleaning in the morning, answering to the telephone. But I had the chance to walk in the right place, which was the Hotel Raphael in Paris. It was hard, but I was lucky because I was in the middle. Suddenly, I left that life which was hard, but I did like it anyway, of a stonemason. And suddenly, I was in a hotel, a lot of luxury, carrying the luggage of Burt Lancaster, Gene Kelly, Robert Mitchum, Mickey Rourke, and suddenly I was making a lot of money. that was an important moment in my life. Suddenly I knew I was taking another direction. Happy because I was seeing something new, but in the inside of me, I was sorry to leave that other world, dad, stonemason business and all that stuff. And that was probably the first big step in my life.
Tell me that story of you becoming a concierge at the Hotel Raphael and obviously now the Hyatt in Paris.
Well, everything went quite fast. You know, I entered in this hotel. First of all, they hired me as a bellboy. And probably I was 7 or 8 months after my beginning there. They pushed me as an assistant concierge, which is just the first level, because the guy that was working there since several years decided to sign up in the army. So the Légion étrangère, something, it was very important for him. So, and he said, you can take my place. And I said, no. Yeah, you can do it. You come on, you can do it. Just do it. You know, you heard that before. Just do it.
Once or twice.
And it really started. So 8 months after, I was assistant concierge. Probably a small year after that, they asked me if I wanted to be the night concierge, which was okay. You work, it's a nice night shift. You start at 8 p.m. and you finish at 8 a.m. But it was a different way to learn this this new side of the world. And probably two years after. But at that moment, they asked me to walk in also to sign up in the International Gold Keys, which is something very important in this business. Actually, we're only 4,000 through the world and only 400 in France. And at that moment, I was probably 23. I was the youngest gold key in France. that's for sure.
So can you quickly explain that? Probably a lot of people are unfamiliar with the term gold keys.
Well, the gold keys, it's an association, you know, it's just, it has been created in 1929. So we did party in Cannes last year, the 90th anniversary of the creation of the gold, International Gold Keys. And it's just, we're supposed to be the over the top of what we have in this kind of business. So when you walk in that association, you have to have two godfathers that are also some kind of a chief concierge in some other big hotels. Of course, they follow you, they keep an eye on you, and they help you. And through the world, we are 4,000, and we have this connection that if we need anything, wherever we are, for us or for a guest or for a friend, we just pick up the phone and we find a solution.
Amazing.
And that's what it is, yes.
Describe that conversation with your dad when you've been that stonemason with him, that team, for 5 to 6 years. And then you say, you know what? There's this opportunity to become a concierge and try out that life. Bring me into that conversation, which was most likely a difficult one to have with your dad.
It was a difficult one, probably more for myself than for him, because he was, of course, like all the dads that do love their children the way they're supposed to do. He was happy that I move up to try to do something that really pleased me, and you know, that's going to bring me further. But it was really hard, because he didn't talk too much about that. But I knew he was happy and sad at the main time. The way I felt too, to be honest. Happy because I'm flying with my own wings. On the same side, he knew that he was losing his buddy that was up every morning at 5:30 with him, ready to go and to move on. And even today, when I talk about this, it's hard. It's hard. But it did work out okay. I mean, he thinks that I realized that after the business didn't go as good as it was going on when I was working with him. Maybe he didn't have the support anymore he had when I was working with him. Sometimes I have this question on my mind. I mean, I don't have regrets, and don't think I have any kind of regret on that. But you know, you can ask this question. Maybe I should have backup, go back with him, continue a little bit. We will never know. I think he was happy for me, but it was a hard decision for both of us. But he did accept it, and I did continue. That's it.
Louis, so now you get into being a concierge. You've been there for 32 years now, and obviously you made that decision. And you do better than most people I know. You make that decision, and you keep going. Because as you said, no regrets. We're all doing the best we can every single day on this earth with the decisions we're presented with. So now you're a concierge. You're initially at the Hotel Raphael for 4 years. And then you go over to the Hotel Hyatt à Paris, dans le centre de Centre-Ville à Paris. Tell me about a couple of moments or stories that stand out from your time at the hotel, interacting with players, guests, celebrities. I would love to hear about some of these memorable moments for you.
You know, it's when I stepped out of the Hotel Raphael, which is some kind of little palace, luxury palace with only 87 rooms. And then you walk in this big building that's 34 floors with 1,000 rooms. And I was really impressed, but it was a big challenge for me. If I can work in a 87 rooms, but can I work also in a 1,000 rooms hotel? That was the big challenge. It was another gift, like I was talking about the moment I walked in the Raphael, and then I felt I was in the middle of this Hollywood business with all those actors that you all see on TV, and then you're in the same room with them and you talk to them. And you, after that, when I arrived in the Concorde Lafayette, because now it's the Hyatt Regency, but at that moment the real name was Concorde Lafayette, the one that your dad knew so well, and suddenly, well, we're going to talk about tennis, because that's something that you probably heard about too. And suddenly you see all those players that same thing you see on TV, and then they're around you, they talk to you, they ask you, they need help, you're there. At a certain moment, we had more than 50% of all the players that were there for the French Open, they were in this hotel, the Concorde Lafayette. I'm going to forget 1,000 names, but, you know, Chong, Stephen Edberg, Sabatini, Jim Courier, and so many others. I mean, Sampras, I mean, they're all there with you. It was just outstanding. It was just wonderful to, of course, when I met all the Nike team and Jerry Quinn, Ricky, Richard Rudney. I mean, all those guys and say, Mike and all the others. It was suddenly a family in the family. I think aside after that, there's a lot of stories, but it's probably one of the best souvenirs I have of helping all those people. Working for them, and I was impressed and happy at the main time. In 91, when you had this young player called Jim Courier that nobody knew, and he had just a wild card. He started by the qualification level, and each time, he's talking French too. He has, like you, some good French behind him. I was very impressed, and each time we said, oh, look who I'm playing today. Oh, I don't know how he knew how to say that, but he was, je vais prendre une raclée. He's going to kick my ass, you know. And at the end of the day, he was coming back and he says, I made it. I won. Incredible. And that same year, he won the French Open for the first time. So all those little stories are just good souvenirs and incredible.
Is there a particular moment during the French Open where you had an interaction with a player in the lobby, in a room, they're getting the Nike gear that you will never, ever forget?
Really, the best thing I will never forget is, it's not a tennis player. Well, somebody that you probably know, that your dad knows very well, which is Yann Hamilton. One of the big bosses at that moment of the Nike team. He was out at the French Open for the final, and I think it was Agassi against probably Courier. I don't know. But the thing is that he was losing that match. I mean, he was so upset that he didn't even stay until the end. He left before the end of the match, and he walked in very upset in that lobby. And I says, hey, Yann, what's up? What's going on? And he said, I think I said, everything's okay. He says, no, it's not okay. It's not okay. He was walking through the lobby, was going to the room, and then suddenly came back and he says, what's your size? And I said, well, I don't know, 11. And then he took off his shoes and put them on the desk. And he says, they're for you. And he went barefoot back up to his room. I thought he was so upset that Agassi was losing that he didn't even feel like wearing these shoes anymore. So he put them on the desk and he walked up to his room barefoot. So probably one of the big souvenirs, one of the first and biggest souvenirs I have with the Nike team.
He gave you his shoes after the match.
His own shoes, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the relationships you've been able to build through these 32 years you've been a concierge with the Nike team and some of the guests in the hotel, what that's mm-hmm. meant to you?
Well, that's the way I worked. I mean, I never felt like if I was really working. It was more like if all these people, famous or not, working or movie stars or whatever, it's more like it was some kind of friends walking through my house. And of course I never my watch to say that I mean it's too late, I can't help you anymore or something like that. I mean I really try to put in the middle of this some kind of friendship over the fact that I was the concierge and that they were the guests. I always wanted to go further than what I was only there for. Well, when I say only there for, as you know, you walk in behind your desk, you're supposed to just answer questions, organize the stay of the guest, and help if they need. But if I could do more, I think the thrill was there to do a little bit more each time. And in some kind of way, if I could be their friend a little bit, it was something very important for me. So that's the way I managed all that. Yeah.
And you've been such an incredible friend to so many people, Louis. You two are formidable. Le meilleur ami. Okay, I want to dive into your extraordinary talent and passion for singing. And particularly, I'm going to ask you if you can tell our listeners today the story of how you met your wife, Natalie.
Oh, well, that's, Aël is just walked in. You want to say hello?
Bonjour, tu vas bien? A bientôt.
Nathalie, là, tu fais un petit message.
Hi, Patrick.
Comment ça va?
Ça et toi?
Formidable. C'est un grand plaisir de parler avec Louis. Tu as le meilleur mari. Il est formidable.
I know.
He is so great. Au revoir, Aël, le méchant grenouille.
Well, to answer to you the question, the way we met the first time, well, you know that I always loved to sing, and I was organizing also some events in nightclubs in Paris, and there was a famous nightclub also under the hotel, under the Congress Center, which is just next door. And of course, we're talking about something that happened 25 years ago. And I was presenting this show every Wednesday night, Wednesday evening. And so there were singers, actors, models. And it was quite fun, because also some people from the hotel were coming, friends. And of course, I had the chance to sing there every Wednesday. And those kind of evenings, you meet a lot of people. And Natalie was part of a photo model company. And that I did ask to come just to present the models on stage, and she was one of those. She's the one that that really some kind of, so you feel something very special. You see something, some kind of light was on her that I couldn't. I understood that she was the one, And nothing can explain that. You just realize that at the moment, and that's the way we met the first time. The first time she did see me, I was singing on stage. And then after I met her just in the same evening, and somebody told me, well, she's not free. She's living already with someone. So I says, no, that's impossible. That is impossible. So I didn't talk to her the first evening, but the next week I did talk to her a little bit. So I just introduced myself. And finally, after a couple of weeks, as a concierge, we have some invitations and big restaurants in Paris. So I did push this through. So it says I'm invited in this wonderful restaurant, but I don't want to go alone. Would you accept to come with me? And she said yes. So I was the happiest man on earth. And that's the way it started.
Bring me into this scene. You are standing on stage. You're probably singing Tom Jones. You're doing something you absolutely love. And you see Natalie. What is going through your head?
Well, at that moment, you say, oh, my God. Because, of course, I was single. And he says, if I had this kind of person in my life would be so much better. But at that moment, you just think it's a dream. It's funny the way you at that moment, you inside of yourself, you say, I would love to have this, but I will probably never have it. And finally, when this dream does come true, this is the best part of it. This is where everything starts. It's probably like any challenge you have on your mind during all your life. You have a goal. I think that maybe our first reflection is say this is going to be impossible, but nothing is really impossible. Where there's a will, there's a way. So there's always a solution. The big deal is to find the solution. That's it.
And now look at you, three beautiful daughters. You've been married to Natalie for so many years. You have an incredible family. You've had a restaurant. You've done so much together. Amazing, Louis. How did you get into singing?
So how did I get into this passion? Because it's more a passion than anything else. I think we all, in the family, everybody was singing a little bit. I have a big brother that always sang. My sister, my dad, and since I'm a kid, I always sang a little bit. When all the family came to Paris when I was only 17 years old, my big brother wanted to be a professional singer. And I started to write some songs for him, because he says, okay, you want to sing, but you need songs. So I'm going to write you songs. basically, I even started to be some kind of manager, you know, calling the record companies, say, okay, I've got this singer. Do you want to listen to him? Can I send you some records? And, you know, can I have an appointment with you? And it's a hard business, because you have to knock on a lot of doors, and a lot just say no, and they say, no, we're not interested. And so you have to keep going on. And of course, I was organizing some recordings for my brother. And one day I did prepare everything in a big studio in Paris. And there was two new songs he was supposed to record. And I love my brother, but he's not always very easy. And suddenly that day he said, no, I don't like these songs. No, and I'm not going to sing them.
What?
So, hey, Charlie, his name is Charlie. And I said, you know, we've got the studios, all the musicians are here. I mean, I paid these guys to be here. So, yeah, but I don't like this song. So, and he walked out of the studio. And so, of course, everything was paid for anyway. So I said, okay, guys, my brother's out, but I'm going to sing the songs. So this way, you won't be there for nothing, and I won't be there for nothing too. So, and it started there. And suddenly I said, well, why shouldn't I do it myself too? So, you know, I always respect my brother. He's fantastic. He has such a voice. He's really incredible. But at the main time, I says, okay, I can do it too. And suddenly when you tasted that and you feel good doing that, I did continue. And then I took some lessons with this teacher that had a lot of big singers in France, well-known, but she only worked with professionals. And I was the only one that didn't have a record company behind him and all that. So I knocked on her door, says, you know, I want you to be my teacher. She said, well, what is your record company? He said, I don't have no record company, but I want you to be my teacher. She says, no, I only work with professionals. And says, well, listen to me at least once and you'll tell me if you want to keep me or not. And he says, okay, so come back tomorrow. And then I had a first lesson with this wonderful teacher. And after we had this first lesson together, she told me, okay, I'm going to keep you in my team because you're good. So that was, for me, it was, but you're good, but I'm very expensive. She said, I don't care. So I did work with her for a couple of years, and that gives you a lot of confidence. You know, you feel so much better. And of course, I had so many examples around me. I mean, I'm, you know what I think about Tom Jones and Frank Sinatra and all those big singers. So I worked hard to do something like they do, which is, of course, it's not very easy. And for several years, I really tried to be a professional singer. At the main time, working at the hotel and doing my little events and all that. But at a certain moment, you realize that, you know, maybe it was the level was too high. And I do believe that if something is supposed to happen, it will happen. And if it doesn't happen, it means that it was meant to be this way. Once again, no regrets.
That right there has been a theme that has come up a lot in our friendship. The idea of, again, just diving into something, trying something, being persistent, trying the singing, going up to Natalie after you see her and say, hey, let's come on over here. Here's the invitation. Or even trying the restaurant. How did you adopt that such a courageous attitude when you see something that might be foreign at first, you've never experienced it, but yet you still give it a chance?
It's probably not easy. I mean, it's not easy, but it's just that I just believe that if you really want something, you have to give it a try anyway. And the only people who lose is the people that don't try. You can try something. If you don't succeed, c'est la vie. But you did it. You did try it. I'm going to give you another example of one day what happened. At the moment, I really wanted to be a professional singer. There's a musical comedy called here in France, in Europe, called Starmania, and that did work for more than 20 years. It was a fantastic show, and they had an English version called Tycoon. And by the way, there's a song inside of that musical comedy sang by Tom Jones called I Would Love to Change the World. Yeah, you have to listen to this one of these days. I Would Love to Change the World by Tom Jones. And I was working one day at the hotel and somebody told me, you know, they're looking for some singers. You know, they're looking for some singers for this new comedy shows on the English version. And says, well, cool. So who is taking care of this? So they gave me the address of the company taking care of these auditions for, we call this the casting, find some new singers. And I called him and I asked to speak to the man in charge of this. And so, no way to have to speak to this guy, too important. And I was not big enough to talk to this guy. And basically they tell me some people, secretary and all that, they tell me that anyway, it's finished tomorrow. So, you know, if you're not on the list, you're not on the list. And so I hang up, say, that's impossible. They're still there in the theater of Mogador in Paris. They're still there tomorrow and doing some castings to find new singers. And they're not going to listen to me. It's impossible. So I had to talk to this big boss of that company. So inside of myself, I said, I probably know someone that he knows. I have to invent something. So I called back this time. I did pretend. So just to tell you, sometimes a small lie is not bad sometimes. I mean, I did tell him I was the manager of myself. I took another name. So, oh, I'm Phil Newton. I'm the manager of Louis Grenier. And I'm calling from the... on the behalf of Jean-Marie Perrier, which is somebody well-known. So I want to speak to the boss. His name was Gilbert Couillet. And then the secretary that was telling no to me since 24 hours says, of course, right away, I'm going to connect you. And then I'm connected with the big boss and says, yes, what can I do for you? So, well, I'm Phil Newton. I'm taking care of this young singer, Louis Grenier. And I know that you still have some castings today and tomorrow at the Tourette Mogador. I mean, if you didn't listen to my singer, you didn't listen to anybody. So... and they're telling me that it's not possible. And said, of course not. Of course it's possible. Of course. So just tell them to go there tomorrow morning. Tell them that I send them. And no problem. They're going to open the door. And anyway, just to tell you that I went there. I sang my song. And I think I sang it. I sang this song very well. There was a pianist with me. And they're all there. And they said, oh, what a voice. But what is your, once again, what is your record company? And it says, well, I don't have a record company. No, oh, too bad. Because in that kind of business, they if you're part of a team of a record company, of course, they have some advantage that they wouldn't have if you just come from nowhere. So anyway, it didn't work out. It didn't work out. But I was so happy. I mean, I did the thing that was that everybody told me was impossible. You'll never be able to go there and they'll never listen to you. But I went there. They did listen to me. It didn't work out, but I did what I had to do. And I think it's probably the same thing for everything. I mean, you have to try. You have to give your best. You have to give your best. You do everything. This way, there's no regrets. You can't say, oh, maybe it would have worked if I did this or that. No, when you do everything you can, it's okay, even if you don't succeed. And that's it.
So true, Louis. So true. Effort.
Always.
That reminds me of another story we haven't even touched upon, but I'd be honored if you could tell the story about how the heck you got into owning a restaurant for so many years, Le Cinquième Set. Would you be willing to share that story today?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course. Well, it's that's another challenge that wasn't supposed to happen, but did happen. You know, we live in a little town near Paris called Puteaux. They have this this tennis club, and inside of the tennis club, there's a restaurant. And I knew this place when two of my daughters were playing tennis when they were only probably 8 and 10 years old. And there was some kind of little restaurant there that more looked like a cafeteria than something else. And they decided, and then the people that were taking care of this cafeteria restaurant told me one day, we're going to be kicked out because they want some private owners to have this and to create something else. And so I was, I really didn't agree with that. Says, well, it's a pity because this little place was nice. And suddenly there was no more restaurant in that tennis club. And for several months, there was no restaurant there. You could only go there, play tennis, but no bar, no restaurant, nothing. And one day we're in the beginning of the year of 2010, and we go for a little bike ride with the girls in the Bois de Boulogne. We come back over the bridge of Puteaux, and it's probably 1:30 or 2 p.m. And then I look at the girl and says, well, let's go to the tennis club. There's probably a new owner there, and we're gonna have lunch in this place. So we just ride our bikes over there, and we walk in the club, and the restaurant was still closed. And I said, well, this is really terrible. I mean, it's closed since more than 8 months, and there's nobody there to run a new restaurant. This is it's not acceptable. And some guy that was there around says, hey, Luis, instead of complaining, why wouldn't you just go and see the city hall? Maybe you and your wife could do something here in this place. I said, oh, yeah, you bet. And we just walked away. And it was a Saturday afternoon. I was quite certain that anyway there was something programmed for later on, but we didn't have no chance to have this things. But I did tell Nappy, well, send a little email. We never know. Tell them that we're a couple, that you work already in the restaurant business, myself hotel business, and we have good ideas, and we're really interested about doing something in this place. But you know, it's just something that you. It's just like if you throw a stone in the middle of the sea and says, let's see what will happen. And this was Saturday afternoon. We send this email Saturday afternoon. Monday morning, they call us. It says, well, yes, we're looking for some people to do this. But you, I don't know how we call this in English. In France, we call this an appel d'offres. You know, they just put some announce in the papers, and you have 2 months to bring your program, your project. But the thing is that this program was open since almost 2 months, and we only had two more days to bring our project.
I'm going to stop you right here real fast just to get a recap. So for 8 months, this restaurant has been empty, and you guys are like, where's the food? Who's going to take it over next? One day you go to the restaurant, and a friend or someone says, hey, Luis, why don't you and Natalie open up a restaurant here? So you think, oh, that's a crazy idea. So then when you and Natalie inquire about perhaps applying to open up a restaurant or whatever, they say, you have 2 days to give us an idea.
That's right. That's right. And we give this, we put something on paper, you know, quickly, with the menu, with what we would do for kids, what we would do for the tennis players, what we, you know, the idea of what would be, we would love to do there. And we just put it the day we're supposed to leave it. That was Monday, and we were supposed to leave it before Thursday, 12 o'clock. So in fact, we had 3 days. And at Thursday at 11:30, we did bring our project to the city hall. And of course, we needed money that we didn't even have. But of course, you pretend that you have it. So, and they called us the next day. It says, congratulations, it's yours. And you say, my God, we're in trouble.
Oh, my gosh.
We were so, so happy. You imagine that? We have a bike ride on Saturday. We send the email Saturday afternoon. They call us Monday. They tell us you only have 2-3 days to do this. We do it. Telling ourselves that we're just doing it to say ourselves that we did try, but we really believe we only have one chance on 1 million to have it. And they call us the next day and says, congratulations, it's yours. So suddenly in 6 days, everything is moving on so fast. That was incredible. And that was in February 2010. And we did open the restaurant at the end of April 2010, just 3 months after.
And you had that restaurant for over 10 years, and you were able years. To yeah. create such a community. And obviously, so I wish you guys were still able to have the cinquième set, parce que le cinquième set était le meilleur restaurant à toute la France. What did that teach you about simply trying something new, making that effort?
Once again, I think it's Mark Twain, you know who Mark Twain was? I think one day he said, they didn't know it was impossible, so they did it. And it's probably sometimes going so far, you think it's impossible, but maybe it's the fact that you think it's impossible. Maybe that's what gives you the strength to do it. I didn't need to tell you this story of the fog race on the Eiffel Tower, La Grenouille.
You know, dis-moi, tell me.
It's a funny story. I'm trying to translate it in English. One day, there's a lot of frogs around the Eiffel Tower, and they want to make a race. Who's going to be the fastest frog to climb up the Eiffel Tower? And says, okay, let's go. And one, two, three, let's do it. And so they all climb up the Eiffel Tower, and a few fall down, and some others on down there say, "No, stop, don't climb up, it's too dangerous." So a lot of them just stop, come down, the others fall, and there's one frog that continues, and they say, "No, stop, you're gonna kill yourself." And the frog does climb up and goes up to the top of the Eiffel Tower. And he says, "Yes, I won. And when he comes down, everybody realized that he's deaf. And he made it because he didn't hear the others telling him that it was impossible, that it was too dangerous, that he couldn't do it. Just the fact that he was deaf made him go to the summit, and he did win that race. So I think in life you have to be careful about what you hear around yourself. And what so many people will tell you, it's impossible, don't do it, it's too dangerous. I think it's sometimes you have to be just concentrated on what you want to do and don't listen too much negative words around that will not help you to go where you're supposed to go.
Putting the blinders on and staying focused and listening to your heart.
Listening to your heart. I think that's the real deal, the real solution, that's the answer. I think so.
How do we better listen to our hearts, Lewis?
Oh, that looks like some kind of faith that you have, or you don't. You know, having faith is a gift. Some people have it and some don't. I'm not good enough to teach people how to have faith if they don't. I just know that when you have it, it's really such a gift that can bring you so far and help you in all moments. I think we're just talking about faith. It's faith.
Lewis, so I'd be honored to end our conversation today by asking you if you'd be willing to sing a little Tom Jones for all of us. Perhaps a few lines from your favorite song. We all need to hear the world famous Lewis Crenier. If there's a specific line or song you'd like to share with us.
I was talking about this song, you know, "I Would Love to Change the World." It's a little bit me, by the way. The lyrics are signed by a songwriter called Tim Rice. Yeah, I'll give you a little piece of that if you want to hear that. Of course, a cappella, no music, but it goes this way. "I've been on course since 17. It's who you know and where you've been. Until it's you they want to know. I've learned the rules, there are no rules, except that gentlemen are fools. I order principles to go. There is no secret to success, as long as others want it less. It is not substance, it is style. There is no deal that can't be done, retaliation can be fun. I never walked that extra mile. I have acquired the winner's touch of seeming happy with so much. I can be honest if required. I have succeeded and that's all. But then as far as I recall, that's really all that I desire. Oh, I would love to change the world. It's many failings, one by one, to be the artist, poet, priest, to feel the moments can be done. And I would love to fall in love, to lose my heart, to lose control, to break away, set rolling free the darkest secrets of my soul. The darkest secrets of my soul."
Oh my gosh, Lewis.
I would love to change the world. I probably forgot a few words, but.
You are amazing. You are not only an incredible singer, entrepreneur, concierge, friend, supporter, but you've taught me how to love and welcome other people so much deeper and richer than I could have ever done on my own. So thank you. Merci.
Mon ami. You did me too a lot of things. You know, you don't know that, but You did something while you were here in Paris that I do follow you and think of you each time I can. I mean, you did something that really impressed me one day when, well, you did it several times, by the way. It's so natural for you, so you don't even see it yourself. But, you know, just picking up a paper that's in the middle of the street and go and put it in the trash. It's so simple. It's so simple. If everybody did this, I mean, you can imagine that this all those streets would be just clean. I do it now myself too. You did teach me that. And when I walk my dog outside also, Pablo, if there's something on the street, well, we just pick it up and we bring it to the next trash can, and it doesn't cost anything. And so you see, I'm just opening that little parenthèse to tell you that you did teach me too some wonderful things.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Small actions change yes. the world. That's yes. all you. Lewis, thank you for the conversation today. This was just an incredible gift. We love you so much. We think about you so much.
We love you so much too. And please say hello to all the family. And I'm really proud of you. I mean, I know your parents are proud of you too, but I'm really proud of you. I mean, you do things. You, just like this song, you want to change things. You want to change the world. I mean, we need more people like you that give hope. I think this is just incredible and so wonderful. So once again, thank you and congratulations for everything you do. You're really the best. And I know what I'm talking about.
Lewis, you are incredible. I am me because of people like you, because I get to learn from the mentors and figures in my life who are already changing the world. We're doing it together. Ensemble.
God bless you.